So I'm starting off with Rashi in this week's parsha. Pasuk says that by the parsha's Mitzara, it talks about the Nigei Batim. So the Kohen, Mitzibah Kohen, Mipinos Abayis, they cleaned out the Bayis before the Kohen came. They emptied out the Bayis. That's a better word. They emptied out the Bayis before the Kohen came. So Rashi says, why are you emptying out the Bayis? So he says, because what's very what the problem is, because really time call a shabbat boys, it will become tummy. See, you'll be terrible in the entire. It's only the only candle which are not don't become tor are pachim ketanim. Things are not of charis. Things are not of wood, metal. You can terrible become tor. Food you can eat when you're tummy. So there's like, what's the problem? The problem is. These kli charis, which Chazal and Jen, those were like considered like the cheapest and least significant of the items which a person though. Mikan shataras chasal mamon shayisal. The barashim is concerned about people's money. He doesn't want us to lose money for no purpose. You find that the Gemara says this in Menachos as well. The Gemara says. We're discussing about the halachas by the lechem upon him, which was a daily, was a weekly occurrence. So the level of type of flour that they used was a less expensive flour. Whereas the Mishnah says why? Because you see that the Bereshit must cost someone to Yisrael to use that very expensive flour week after week after week. It would be a pressure on Klal Yisrael. So we didn't do that. And that's an interesting concept because you have a rule of Ein Yisrael Kamashir is when you apply it, you don't apply it. That's a different discussion a little bit. The Mor says, "How do you know?" So the Mor brings a different pasuk in the story of the by Mei Meriva that the Bereshim brings out water with Teshto Eidu Ubiro, and the Mela this way Klal Yisrael and their animals will be able to drink as well. So why does he mention that the animals can drink as well? Because the Bereshim has Chasam Anu Shai Yisrael, because he's sending enough water that all the animals shouldn't die, not because he's worried about the animals dying. Is because he doesn't want Klai to lose money. And the Bereshim clearly was making a distinct nais, the amount of water that you need to maintain the Klai on the midboard was a large amount of water. Besides adding on the animals, the numbers just like go like through the roof. The numbers are close to the roof as it is. Right? Let's say for argument's sake, you imagine that every member of Klai, so you know, average person uses a gallon of water. I don't know, they use a gallon of water in those days. Let's say they use a gallon of water. So you have men, women, you have children, approximately 2.5-3 million gallons of water coming out of this bear a day. That's just people. Chazal say that there's nobody in Klai who left Mitzrayim and didn't come out with 90 donkeys to him. So each the 600,000 households, each one had 90 donkeys. Right, so the math gives you that 54 million donkeys, right? 600,000 households, right? So, and now how much does a donkey drink? I don't know, but then they had a lot of, they had sheep, they had cattle, right? I once checked in a library. This is the good old days. Checked in a library. A average sheep drinks a gallon of water a day, and a ewe, which is lactating, which is nursing, drinks 2 gallons of water a day. Right. So you know, I mean, I don't know. So you're talking about basically Niagara Falls was coming out of the ground. Right. You know. So, which you have to understand, you know, the Chet HaMei Meriva in that context. This is just totally an aside. So Moshe Rabbeinu says that Rashi, it was a lack of Kiddush Hashem. You're in the middle of a midbar. Right? All of a sudden, like, you know, Niagara Falls comes out of the ground. But if you would have spoken to the rock, it would have really been an ace. Christ really would have copped it's an ace. And now it's like it's a shigoless ace. And the difference between the two Nisim is like, you know, it's somewhere between infinity and like Googleplex and infinity. Like, you know, like that's the difference between the two of them. And the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, he has to be Nifter. He can't go to Sir, that's to be Nifter. That's the Madrega of the version of Adatik and Sadiqim Chutasara. I mean, the ace was a mind boggling ace. You know, if he hits a rock, people will say maybe it's because there really was water there beforehand. Like, really? Like, you know, it just happens, like, you know, just pull out, like, you know, 50 billion, you know, gallons of water, like, you know, just by with one hit of a rock. And they're not going to say that. Okay, anyway. So the Rosh was called someone that extraordinary nace is because the Rosh cares about the money of Klal Yisrael. So I just want to talk about the attitude towards money, towards properties. You know, so we clearly see that, you know, that the Rosh is machshav of the fact that we have properties and we have to deal with it. We have to take that as a bracha. We look at Ashiras as a bracha. There are religions, the Havdu, which look at that as it's a challenge, and you know, really being, you know, they have power, they have vows of poverty and all these wonderful things, you know, etc. Like, you know, we said that's not true. That's not how we look at it. We don't look at it like that. I told you once before from Hirsch about Baltashkas. Does that sound familiar? Okay, there's a Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos says that a person is kriya begadim b'chamosai. A person who gets angry to the point that he rips clothing, you should perceive him as a person who does avodah zarah, because that's the way of the Yetzer Hara. Today he says do this, tomorrow he says do that, next he says do avodah zarah, and you do avodah zarah. So Hirsch says, what does that mean? I mean, so the person who doesn't, you should start with, you know, why kriya begadim b'chamosai. A person who hits his little sister, eventually he's going to do a bazaar. Like you're saying, the Yetzer Hara, he starts small, he gets big, eventually he does a bazaar. That's not what the Gemara means. The Gemara means he's dealing with a very, very small form of a bazaar, till you eventually get to the point where he does the actual bazaar. So why is this a bazaar? What's that bazaar Shabbat? So he says the root of a bazaar is the denial that the world belongs to Kadosh Baruch Hu. When it comes to somebody's item, a borrowed item, I have total rishus to use. Do whatever I'm supposed to do with it, I can do with it. But I have no rishus to destroy it. Only the owner has the right to destroy something. When a person comes and he takes something of this world and he destroys it, what he's saying is the person is not the owner, he's the owner. That's already that's a ma'ain of a bazaar. He took the person off the pedals and put himself in the place. So it's not mamash avodah zarah, but that's the Yetzer Hara starts. You start with that attitude. You, sir, can do whatever you want because you're really the boss. Okay, eventually the person will do actual avodah zarah. So he says it comes out that the aver in the Torah of Baltashkas that you may not wantonly destroy trees because they're not yours. They belong to Kodesh Baruch Hu. Is one of the most foundational mitzvahs of the Torah. This is Baltashkas. That's what he writes. Awesome thought process. Mm-hmm. Like Altasha says, what, yelling at your kid, don't waste your food. Yeah. Right? It's saying it's a whole different ball game. It's understanding that the Bershom gives us something for a reason. I once saw there's a little booklet. A book came out from a person named Rabbi Pinchas Winston from Toronto. I have no idea. This came out 30 something years ago. So I don't know whether he's still in Toronto. I don't know where he is, what he does, etc. He was running the H program in Toronto at that point in time, I think. And the name of the book was, or little booklet was, If Only I Were Wealthy. And this picture of like a person with like a lot of dollar bills on the cover. And his the subtitle was the Torah's attitude towards wealth. That was the. So there's a mission office. The mission office says that a person should not be mafleg. You shouldn't be mafleg the person. You know, there's no way this person has anything significant to contribute. Everybody has shein l'chaladim shein l'shaw. There's no person doesn't have his moments. Every person has something to contribute. And everything has its place. So he gives the following thought process, right? You go to the store and you buy a bag of rubber bands, right? Cost a dollar. 100 rubber bands, a dollar. Rubber band costs a penny, right? I don't know what the cost nowadays is, right? 1 penny for a rubber band. So how valuable is a rubber band? You just throw a rubber band out there. How valuable is a rubber band? So he says, imagine the following scenario. So a person is sitting at his desk, and so Reuven is sitting by his desk, and Shimon comes in with a suitcase full of money. they've been making a collection for the purpose of a young man who needs a surgery. And they bring in they got the cash, whatever it was, $20,000. And he brings it in. They have the money ready to go deliver it to the doctor to pay for the surgery. So Reuven opens up the briefcase and he sees a big wad of bills. He takes out the rubber band and he wraps it around the bills. Fine. Puts his coat on, puts his hat on, goes outside. Outside it's very windy, and he trips and he falls. And the briefcase bursts open. But since there's a rubber band around the money, it doesn't fly away.
You saved $100,000.
Right. So he gets the briefcase again, goes to the hospital, gives the money, they do the surgery, and they save this young man's life. This is the moshel that he gives. The young man grows up, goes into Secret Service, and he's assigned the duty of covering the president. And one day there's an attempt on the president's life, and he saves the president's life. He says, so what saved the president's life? A rubber band. That's the mashal that he gives. That's what the Mishnah is saying. There's nothing that doesn't have a function. So our attitude towards money, towards items, is the Bereshit put them in the world, they're kelim to accomplish things. Now, it's a real problem. We live in a society which this is extremely problematic. Right? Because if we would take that, you know, I'm old enough to remember the idea of that, you know, when you got a hole in your socks, you would darn the sock, and you would, right? So my shir says, once upon a time you would darn the sock, now you say darn sock, and you throw it away, right? That was my shir's line about it, you know? Like, yeah, we didn't waste things. Like, so I have to, it drives me crazy. So I get something, you know, in the mail, you know, in a box. Those boxes are good boxes.
Yeah, everybody throws them out, yeah.
But if I'd save all my boxes, I wouldn't have where to live. Like, we created a society which we were forced to throw away. I told you that my wife told me this story about these girls who went to work in Russia, like after the Iron Curtain came down, the whole thing. So they had these summer programs. They had, you know, camps where these kids and the girls would go from Cleveland. They would go, then they had a camp there. They ran there for girls. So the girls came back, and I told my wife the following story. Says they were staying. Either they were staying there, or they were. That's where the girls were. They would go pick up the girls. These girls live, and they have these gigantic high-rise buildings, you know, with like hundreds and hundreds of apartments. So between these two gigantic buildings, like, you know, bigger than the size of the towers, there is one small dumpster, which was emptied once every 2 weeks. That's how much was thrown out over there. Nothing.
Yeah.
They were poor. They didn't throw anything out. So they gave the girls chewing gum, the, you know, kosher chewing gum. The girls saved it the whole 30 days. They saved it from day to day. They never had gum before. So each day, at the end of the day, they would take it out and they put it in a little thing so they could have it the next day. And they used the same wad of chewing gum for 30 days straight. And tell the American girl to save, you know, first, I don't like people chewing gum. Let's say girls chewing gum, right? You don't save it from day to day. Remember, it's day to day, the same day. You know, you have the gum that you use in the morning, and then you throw that out. You have gum in the afternoon. The box of all of those little pieces, you know, it's finished by, you know, in 2 days, you know. 30 days, one piece of gum. We have a problem in our society.
The things are so cheap, and our time is more valuable, so...
Right. So
the time it takes to gather the boxes is more valuable than the price of the...
Now we recycle everything.
So
that's the problem.
But right? the musig of that understanding that the Russian gave us something, and with something which we could do with it. Right? They spent time before on this. You know, that was the society allowed for it. Our society does not allow for it. And there's something which is diminished in the understanding of the relationship to what the Bereshit gives us and how we're supposed to appreciate it from then till now. That is one point. There are a few points over here in the pack. We're not going to get through the whole pack, but you know, just a lot. I was busy coming up with different ideas. Like, you know, got a little bit slap happy over here. Okay. First piece is from Morale. So Morale actually in the Sivas, Morale has a saber in the Sivas over, two volumes. And it's divided up into what he calls many different Nesivim, which is like little topics. So he has a topic on the topic of Osher, on the topic of wealth. So he brings a Gemara on Shabbos. So the Gemara has multiple definitions of what it is. But Rameir's point is, a person who has nachas ruach finds pleasure in having his money. It's comfortable for him. Retirement says that he has many people serving him, and he has many properties. Rav Kiva says it's a wife who's in love with myself. He has to make a kisa samach shochonoi. Okay, so he has to explain what does it mean that they have to do with Osher, right? Especially, you know, not isha nobe maser, basically samach shochonoi. What's the point? Okay. So three lines on the bottom, on the right column. Kimi archa sheikra oisher shem is brought nos and lotim shelo yeh chaser. Okay, the idea of Osher is you shouldn't be a chos, you shouldn't be lacking. That's what Ashiras is not lacking. That's what the word means. If you feel good about what you have, means you don't feel you're lacking, then you're an Osher. He feels he's lacking. You don't have the benefit of Ashiras. That's called you have enough. My wife showed me an article from an H.com article from Rabbi Benny Blech. Rabbi Benny Blech is you remember Shmuel Blech, right? Remember Shmuel?
Yeah.
So they're cousins. They're, right? So he's a Rashi in NYU. So he wrote an article, and I don't remember all the details of the article, but apparently there was this conversation between this very wealthy owner of a company and one of his good workers, etc. And one day the worker says to the boss, "I have something that you don't have." So the boss got very upset. There's nothing that. He's very wealthy. He has everything. So the boss says, "Really? What do you have that I don't have?" He says, "I have enough." That was an awesome line, right? Okay, so the point that Rameir says that the definition of Ashiras is that you're not lacking. So a person who with his wealth feels he's lacking, he's not an usher. That's that point. Okay. I think he puts that down very well. The Nefesh HaChaim on the Mishnah is Osher Sameach B'Chelkoi basically says something along these lines. Okay, so how do you understand Sameach B'Chelkoi? You understand Sameach B'Chelkoi means whatever you have, whether it's a little bit, whether it's a lot, you know, as long as you're happy, wonderful, everything's wonderful, right? So he says in the second paragraph, he named Shemishu Tomid Ani Avin, a person who's impoverished, and he finds a large amount of money, Mishal Rav, a treasure, he's delirious with happiness, Mahalal Kadosh Baruch Hu, Befiva Liba Shavan, he totally is taking Kadosh Baruch Hu, he's praising Kadosh Baruch Hu, the brush is so wonderful, etc. Abharachazman, Karnishkach Mimeno, a reshortness, he forgets, and Samech Bosher Klau. Right? Instead of enjoying his wealth, he wants more. Okay. That which I have a minute ago does not mean I have to have it this minute. At any moment, I can lose it all. So every moment, it's a new nesina from a Kadosh Baruch.
Okay.
So that we're all together as one. Every moment he realizes he could lose it and he still has it, so he has the simcha of getting it. I have mamash a lot of money. It doesn't mean I'm accepting the fact that I'm impoverished. It means I'm appreciating the ashiras that I have. Every moment I'm appreciating it, because I realize that there's no guarantees in life, and the fact that I had it yesterday doesn't mean I should have it today. Okay, that's how he teaches. But okay, so that's the point that he says. I think it's if we appreciate the Rosh gives us what he gives us, but the more we realize that it's totally not in our hands. Rebbe writes a fascinating thing. He says that a person generally feels fairly secure in his life. General, except for barring major wars breaking out, etc., pretty much he has it in control. What comes along and undermines that feeling of security? The mitzvah of bitachon. Bitachon is you realize that the Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the world.
Right.
So that first regga, your reaction is, I'm not the boss anymore. I have no control over anything. That moment that you feel you have no control over anything is the scariest moment. I'm riding on the bus. I take the ground bus. Right, leave the driver to us. I'm like very comfortable, very relaxed, etc. Sitting in the back over there doing my work. I look up and there's no driver. I freak out. There's no control. Right? That's how we look at the world. All of a sudden, when we wake up, realize that I can't really control my health. At any moment, I could lose. Russia could take it away at any moment. I can't control my life. I tell you, Rukhaskal says that people don't get nervous Yamim Naroim. He says, why? Because they hold the Mitzvah Mechel Levaraya. They're the most. The Mershah was the Mitzvah Mechel Levaraya. The Mershah says, you got it all wrong. I'm the most. You're the Mitzvah. And prove to me why I should give it to you. Right? That's the truth. A person could be the smartest person in the world and he could fall and hurt himself and lose all of his mind, And there's all of his self-definition was because he's such a wonderful guy, because he's so smart, and he's not so smart anymore. Now what? He's actually pretty foolish. Right? Or a person that he's geber, and gets a virus and loses all of his muscle. Right? It happens. Any reg, anything can happen to us. We are so not safe. Reading these things about how many microbes there are in the air around you, there's like 40 billion microbes in the space like this, they're all out to eat you, So one of the Harem said you have three options. The three options that a person go through life are either you cannot think about it, because if you think about it, you can go out of your mind. So that's the option called a fair. The horse doesn't think, The famous muscle of the Magad. The Magad said, different people have different reactions to Yom and the Royim. So some people like Rosh Chodesh Elul. Some from the Royim. Some people have Rosh Hashanah. Some people have Yom Kippur. Some people like nothing. Says, there is a fellow who had a very valuable item and he needed to get it out of the country. So in those days, smuggling was, they would shoot. Try to smuggle something in and out of the country, they would shoot you. So, but he's got to get out of the country. So he goes, he hires a smuggler, an accomplice smuggler, and I'll pay you the money, etc. Okay, so they get, they're going on the journey, you have the horse pulling the wagon, and you have the smuggler, and you have the owner, and they're getting closer and closer to the border. So the owner, as soon as he gets on the wagon, he's sweating bullets. Smuggler, I've done this before, nothing to worry about. Gets close to the border, the mice, He knows that, just you make the last time, let me make it this time. He says, but the horse goes through all the way without being batting an eyelash. So some people make it all the way through the Yom Kippur. That's the fair. That's what the Magad said. That's the same thing as the fair as a horse. Right? So option number one is be a fair. Just don't think. Option number two is you think. You become a sugar, you go to your mind. Or option number three, you become a bitayach. You realize the Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the world and you trust the Kadosh Baruch Hu. There's only three options, right? So if you realize that every rega, you don't have health. Every rega, the person is giving you health. So we're delirious. What happened is that I have health. Because every Hijab Barsha just might be healthy. I couldn't see a minute ago, now I can see. Have they got a brush? I could see a minute ago. Right? And, so, are you sure? I had money yesterday. I had, you know, in my bank account, I had, you know, I in my investments, I had $50 million. Okay, and today, I'm starting with zero. Russia gave me $50 million again. Tomorrow, he gave it to me again. Right? So, I'm almost like, I win the lottery every day. That's what the Rebbe Chaim is saying. Okay. Now, the morale in the Mishnah says a little bit different connection to what he says in the Sivas. Bamer Ezer Osher. Yesh lo mer ki ein roish yeh matur adam v'shem Osher kasher yesh lo ribin mamon asher hu b'oitzer avitev Osher. Money, what does money do with me? Money is not me. It's a distinctly separate item from myself. That I should be called an Osher means you're touching me up. Why am I touched up based on my money? Yeah, the mission says, I'm a chacham. I'm a gibur. I'm a mechubad. And I have a lot of money. Like, let's get the word straight. So what is the mission saying? What does it mean that you're an usher? A shiras, which doesn't interface and change who you are, is not a shiras. So I have a lot of money in my bank account. That's very nice. So you have a very rich bank account. When the money it affects how I perceive life, and now I'm a person who relates to the world the way an usher should relate to the world as a happy person. Now I'm an usher. So still I'm not really an usher. But he's called Tzmei B'Chelko. That's fine. That's the point that Morale says. I think it's a gorgeous point. Okay, now the next piece I want to skip. Piece after that. It's a gorgeous piece. No, sorry. It starts at the bottom of the page. Hey, tough man, blog at the bottom. There's a piece of this is quotes from the Satmar Rebbe. Okay. So they should actually have the Nesidus Talmud Shachar. I want to explain the following idea. B'mash Omer Chazal, B'simon Asher Mekamsin. Rich people are misers. Then a move of Nisad Asor B'Seh. It doesn't make any sense. Why? He has very little money. It's very hard to get it. Mr. Rishon Kamsen, he doesn't want to give anything away because it's such effort to get it. It's so valuable to him because he has so little of it. But the Osher has so much. Having a lot makes it less valuable to me. That's not so important to me because I have... Right? That's been the natural response. That would have a little, I appreciate much more than what I have a lot. But the Russian made a nature that's not what happens. The person becomes rich. It's illogical. The guy has $50 million, so I can't get $5. You know? It's money. I don't know. Like you should be the guy who gives away so easily. So why is it worth saying that Usher usually is a counselor? Okay. So listen to the Satmar Rebbe's Chab. Like Mamish, he comes like from Mamish, like 180 degrees. Person who's a kamsen has to be mitakin himself. How does he do tikkun? Certainly to yoyser. The Rambam says you have to go to the other extreme. Fazer harbe kenei lish bras tivoy. Kramer chazal l'niv rodim the shabra esateva. Okay. So the Russian put out each person in the world with a certain nature. And our job is to overcome it. and become the Revolver writes that the Rambam refers to the midas. So we refer to midas. He refers to them as deyos. Deyos means that something which your intellect is deciding when to apply and when not to apply it, as opposed to just I do it naturally. If I'm a nice guy naturally, that's because you're not supposed to be a nice guy. You're supposed to be able to take a stand, etc. You need to have control, the das, to decide when yes and when no. Otherwise, it's nothing. So whatever, even the quote about the good natures, you need to sometimes overcome. But Kabbalah, the bad nature. So how do you overcome? The Rambam says you go to the other extreme. So I have a guy over here as a Kamsa, and he's overcome by giving a lot. He has no money. So Russian doesn't have. He made him an usher. It's not the pshat. Ashirim become Kamsonim. Kamsonim become Ashirim. Because Barsham didn't have a chesed. He gave him a hechel tip to
afford their tikkun.
To afford their tikkun. You only Kamsonim at that. But you start with Father Harper and Lumal Fikaita. Kilabruta who benafshay. There Kachosel Kashbor. I'll be Roy, Marki, Kimeno, Mina, Zusha, Kamsonim. So most of Neim, the Barsham didn't make them Kamsonim because it's not fair to them. How they can overcome their Mina. So Barsham made a Neim, not Kamsonim. Overcome it. So Bereshit did him a favor, made him an usher. They shouldn't be able to overcome his. Now I have to tell you, it's a gorgeous word. I can imagine. You know, if I'm the Rebbe and I'm going to this big miser trying to collect money from him, this line is because Pashat's going to blow him away.
Yeah.
You got it all wrong. Betzim, you're a Kamsa, and your goal, your purpose in life is to become be a better person. The person did you a favor instead of making you known, he made you an usher. So you got it all wrong. You have the right to the shiris. The whole purpose of the shiris is to the heck of him and give me stock.
You get all that stuff,
yeah. Right? Awesome thought process.
Yeah.
Okay, the next piece is okay. The top of the left column. So the decision to move to Eretz Yisrael. This is what they're talking about. Okay, it's because the Shlomo writes this introduction to this is in this person's introduction to the Sefer, but it's actually a quote. I only found the one version of it, which was not a clear version. So the quote over here is "How was it liyadi darbaza?" The Shlomo in is divided up under different topics, so he calls them Masechtas. So he has Masechtas Sukkah. Dear Masha Belibi, how you buy your tummy? I want to mention something which is constantly burning in my heart. Kesharah Reisi Bnei Yisrael Bainim Batim Kama Mirsei Havsarim, building gorgeous homes like the palaces of the nobles. They've been commanding themselves in Chutz Lords. Shomer Chazal, seen about the Tzaddikim Shivar Eretz Yisrael. No, we'll take the house with us. Chamakim, Kamarasim, Hilios, Lahem, Nachlo, Lahanklo, Livneim, Kilo, Hoysazun, Anachlo, Loyal, Zerazare, Arela. Zenir, Kasser Hadas, Megula. If you bring yourself too much on the Mazet, we're not staying here. Famous mice with the Chabas Chaim, right? That the person came to visit the Chabas Chaim. The Chabas Chaim's furniture was like, you know. I had a chaver in Kerbal, like, lived the same building as me. He was older than me, but, you know. I got married already, had like three or four kids. He had a folding table for his dining room table and folding chairs for his dining room chairs, and that was it. Do you need more? You don't need more. The person comes to the Chabad Chaim, and that's what his house looked like. Right? So the person, the visitor from America, asked him, like, where's his furniture? So Chabad Chaim said, back, where's your furniture? He says, no, I'm just passing through. He says, so am I.
Very good.
So, the next piece is the morale. I'm not going to read it inside of the little bit. He goes to this, the Gemara over there, the Gemara talks about there was three Ashirim in Yerushalayim would be able to have sustained Yerushalayim, and that they burnt it, and then the Kerman came, the whole Gemara over there, the Council of Kamsa. So he says, there are three types of Asher. The one type of Asher, which is a Simon, it's a Bracha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Bracha is being made to the person giving him a Bracha. Asher is a Bracha. That's one. The second type of bracha, Osher, is a person gets it, that that he should have, Bershom gives it to take care of his needs. So this person has a large amount that he needs, or the person feels that he has a large amount that he needs, the Bershom is maintaining him. The third one is that the person is deserving of kavod, and our world, you get kavod by a shirim get kavod. Shlomo Melech points out in Michaelis, the kavod was a miskin in Bezuya. You can have the wisest person, but he was an ani, people just don't appreciate him. And the opposite, you know, people who have a lot of money, a lot of fame, their wisdom is appreciated, even though they're not so smart. Like, you know, these actors and actresses are giving their opinions to other people, like, what do they know about anything? But they're public people, they write whatever they want, you know. Because people are going, oh, that's not so smart. He's not an actor anymore, no opinion anymore. Like, Monashat, if you're smart, you're smart. That's our society. See, he wants to say that the three Ashirim over there, each one corresponds to different types of Ashirim. So sometimes the Ashir is to give a person a Hashivas. Sometimes it's to give him a bracha of a kodesh baruch hu. Sometimes it's to give him, they should have money for his needs. Okay. This next piece over here is a piece from Chief Rabbi in England, Rabbi Sachs. Okay. You read the piece yourself, etc. The biggest challenge that the Klai Sefer faces is Ashiris. Pogroms, that hell, Jews stood up, Yiddishkeit, they're in. You put them in a country where, you know, they liked them, they accepted them, and they allowed them to come out, get ahead, quote unquote, get ahead, etc. Be successful, right? Interesting words, right? You're successful because you have a lot of money. You can be a horrible husband, and you know, but you're successful, a lot of money. So that's called success in our society, right? And there, all the Jews lost it. Says so. Some people, he says, there's somebody who suggested. Where is this? Somebody said that but we don't look like that. It says we look at the Betzem Ashiris is, this is not, doesn't have to be something which Betzem is negative for us. And the avodah which we have is to learn how to appreciate the brachas the Bershom is giving us, use the brachas the Bershom is giving us, and use that as a vehicle to close to here it is, last page. First name, I don't know who this is, you know, he quotes this fellow, Salo, last paragraph, second line. Salo Baron called the lachrymose theory of Jewish history. Lacrimal is tears, the lacrimal grants. So, seeing it as a succession of martyrdoms, that's not the Jewish mainstream. That's not how we look at life. People mourn the Tisha B'Av, but immediately you have a Shabbos Nachum afterwards. So I told you my story about my father from Australia. I'll tell you that story. So I had a chaver in yeshiva from Australia. His parents were survivors. Both, if I recall correctly, both parents had been married before the war and lost a mishpacha. And they met after the war and they married. They had one child. One son. They ended up in Sydney, Australia after the war. there's not so much going on in cities of Israel. Melbourne was much more of a Jewish community, but even then, Melbourne did not have a yeshiva gedolah. This is before the kollel started, and now there's a kollel there, there's a yeshiva gedolah, but this. So the son became 15 years old, and he's going to yeshiva to learn. So they sent him to tell his yeshiva. They cannot afford to bring him home. So he was in yeshiva for 4 years without going home.
Sorry.
4 years without going home. He spoke home twice a year by phone, because in those days it was very expensive to talk by the phone. It was like $9 a minute to Australia. Mm-hmm. He wrote letters every week. Every week he wrote a letter home, and then his parents would write a letter to him, and that was it. He saw his father once. His father came to America on business. His father was in yeshiva for Shabbos. Hadn't seen his mother for 4 years. He's going home after 4 years. He's going home. Yamin told me he used to go to friends or to family, and New York, whatever. But he's going home, and I'm picturing the mother's, the homecoming meal that the mother makes for him. The homecoming meal the mother makes for him is going to be called Tu Shabbala. Like, this is a Jewish mother. I mean, it's a mind-boggling thing. It's a Jewish mother who has an only son, and she's a survivor. There's nothing more precious to a survivor than family. And she sent them away to learn Torah for 4 years. It's like, you tell a woman, they send your son away for 6 months straight, so I can't handle it. I'll go to still visit him, we'll come back home. It's hard. Imagine that. All right, he comes home, and his mother puts down like every favorite food that he ever, mentioned one time that he likes, Sits down, says his mother's home cooking. If all he tastes is food, he missed the point. What he's tasting is 4 years of his mother's love wrapped up into a steak. That's the geschmack of the steak. Not the steak, it's the 4 years of his mother's love. That's how you're supposed to eat an apple. That's what I said once. Right? All the Russians love is this gorgeous thing he gave you. So Oishir is a bracha of Kadosh Baruch Hu. If we would take our Ashiris as the all the Russians love that he's giving us and feel it, it's especially like, the brachas we would say, and the hargashas that we would have, and the happiness which we would exude, would be mind-boggling. But we don't. That's his point. Ashiras doesn't have to be, it's an Nisoyan. It doesn't have to be, it's not intrinsically a Sira. If anything, it's Adarabba. Ashiras is, every moment I'm feeling the Russians being mative. And in a gorgeous way. The next piece, pretty straightforward. This is the first point. There are three things about. He's just flaunting, ostentatious. The issue that makes one conspicuous and arouses the envy of others, because people who are not wealthy to become ashamed of the lack of means, and make one arrogant. The purpose of wealth is to help others, not to show it off. So and then he has some understanding of that. The last piece over here. Is from the Brichas of Rome. Shlita. So he points out the idea of the meat of Histapkus is not a meat of Bidyavid. Now you know too much. Learn how to accept it. He says, Adarab, there's definitely a clear unhugga that a person should say, I don't want more because it's just going to be distracting. So we have to grapple with our realities. Right? If we're honest with ourselves that more is distracting, and I'm not having more and feeling a kind of love and responding in kind. For me, more is distracting. So don't buy that lottery ticket. Every once in a while, when the lottery is very big, I don't buy, because I don't want to deal with that amount of money. My wife said, it says Adam Rishon before the Chet, like the way the Mefarshim learned, he had this whole cheshbon, what's going to happen when he eats Tzedas, he'll be Sirva Kadosh Baruch Hu better because he'll have Bechira. He had his whole plan of how it's going to work out. The only problem is he couldn't imagine in his mind what it's like after eating Tzedas. He says, winning a lottery ticket is basically the same thing. Yeah, when I get the money, I'll do this with it, I'll do that with it, and I have all the plans. You have no idea what it's like once you have the money in your hand. It's like it's eating the Eitz HaDa'as. But it's only 20 million, like, you know, like 20 million I think I can handle. Half a billion, I'm not sure I'm ready to handle it. Okay? But I don't think the Rosh Hashanah wants me, that's what I'm supposed to do in my life, so the Rosh Hashanah is going to definitely do a chesed and make me not win. So why should I waste a dollar then? If I'm not going to do the chesed and make me not win.
That's the case, he wants you to have the money, so give him the chance.
Yeah. If the Rosh Hashanah really wants me to have the money,
he'll find another way.
He'll figure it out. All right. He's saying that there's an approach that says, I recognize that these things are distracting. There's a Maisa, I'm not recalling the person's name. There was a Rav in Pittsburgh in the 20s. It's an awesome Maisa. He'd been there for many years. And but Talmud Chacham, he sat and he learned, etc. He was retiring, and the community was very concerned about him, that he had no money, he had no income, etc. So the people in the community got together and they raised money, and they gave him a matana. I'm thinking it was something like $10,000, just like 1920, which is like, I don't know, what's the equivalent now?
$100,000.
$10,000 then, you know, it's probably equivalent to $1 million now, or more, in regards to buying power. So he started giving it away, and they asked him. You know, he would people would come. You know, a person was trying to publish a safe, he'd give $50. He was like giving like large sums of money away. And one of the members of the Kila asked him, you know, like. He says, you don't understand something. You know, Baruch Hashem, I love learning. And I sit and learn the whole day. That's what I've always done. From the moment that this money came into my hands, my mind is distracted. Should I invest it in this? Should I invest it in that? What should I do with it? How should I take care of it? How should I... It's taking away from my learning. I can't deal with it. So I made up my mind that any person who's coming with wants to publish a safer gets $50. Person coming for a moisture, he gets this. Person coming for himself, he gets that. And I'm just giving it away, waiting for people to come. And of course, once the shmook it out that he's giving, you know, there's a line right by the door, you know, Baruch Hashem. And so shortly after, he got rid of all the money. He went back to be able to learn. Money is distracting for many of us, right? And we don't know how much it is. So the attitude of Ima Kain, for me, it's much more healthy not to have it. And I'm very, that's the chachilah by me. They asked Rabbi Krumlin Zatzal. One time they asked him, what would he do if he won the lottery? Rabbi Krumlin was a tzaddik. He was a mashgiach in the Yisrael Yeshiva. He was a tzaddik. He was out the mirror. So without batting an eyelash, he said, I make a cheshbon every penny I receive from the yeshiva as a salary all over all the years, and I give it back to the yeshiva. He says, I don't know that I fulfill my obligations to the yeshiva, so maybe it's kseilu. Wow. So if I had money, I address my potential gzeila issue. That's what he answered. Because he constantly lived with the thought process of I have responsibilities, and they say we're right to the money even. And if I could find some way to give it back, I give it back. So that's this.
Wow.
The last piece over here. The individual who wrote it is an interesting fellow. He's definitely outside of the standard Orthodox Machna. Interesting fellow, from guy. One of his sons aren't here in Yeshiva in a period of time. He's a very deep thinker, etc. His father is like been kumei himself in his own world, etc. I just want to point out the first point over here. Believe in the dignity and morality of business. What is that about? So if you study your little bit of your history, one of communism's thought processes is that business is immoral. Right? Physical work, labor, producing something, that's a valid need, that's a valid purpose. Making money by buying it from people and giving to other people, like, we don't need you. You're just taking advantage of people. So the whole concept of the business of capitalism is an immoral betzah. That's one of the foundations of communism. So we're going to create a system of redistribution of wealth. There'll be no need for these people to do that. So everybody will work because they're supposed to work because work is good. And everyone will get because they need to live. And that's the plan. Right? But the halacha was that business is immoral. So his first point is that business is not immoral. So that in the Kula, the Torah is very clear. It's very clear. The more it talks about the importance of having business.
Right.
Business is the vehicle which the Russian put in the Bria, which allows items, the people who created them and have what to sell, to get the people who need them. That's why the Russian created something called business. Russia could have made a different system. He didn't make that system. You know, they are an intrinsic part of the society. So that point, I thought, was like, you know, the rest of it, I don't know, you know. I could have deleted all of it, but okay, whatever. On my website, I don't have a website, but my website, I'm not putting up the Ten Commandments of how I'm, for making money. That's easy.
Never it.
But that nakuda that and people will become rich. It's not something which is wrong. The Rishonim has reasons why some people become rich. Now the Mora says Anita, this last point, the Mora says Anita, that's not because you're better or you're smarter. Because you could have two people which are just as good and just smart, and this one person will make rich, and somebody won't. And the Mora says that's, you know, you can do everything, but the Russian will decide who he wants to give the shiris to. And he has reason why he gives people the shiris and other people not a shiris. But once we have it, we need to appreciate it. You know, the Russian allows us to have it. It's not something which is evil or bad. For some people, it's an Nisoyan. And yes, for them, maybe in some way it would be better that they wouldn't have it. But for many of us, the message is it's a bracha. You know, we dive in the Chaim Shalosh Shavakavit. We already asked for Chaim Shapranosa. And we asked for Chaim Shalosh Shavakavit. Not Sardin, Ashkenazim. Right? But Be'atzim, it's a tefillah. The tefillah is, it's a Gemara. It's a Gemara. The Rav used to say this tefillah regularly. Now, I don't know, maybe Rav's Asher Rekabit might have been, you know, different than the, you know, I don't think he's into the money, you know. But it's not pranasa. You already said it's not pranasa. So it means you want something more than just pranasa. And that's not an unfair request. But what do you do with it? Do you perceive it as Birchas Hashem? You know, do you appreciate it? Are you careful with it? So I'll just tell you that. I mentioned to Rabbi Shmuel Kaufman from Detroit, right, that the grandson of all for the boss of Yaakov Yosef Herman. He was a Zadis grandson all the way, like total moon and Kodesh Baruch, like, you know, mamish, like, you know, not any spoil from anything. He could say to anybody in their face, to, you know, the right thing to say, what the person wanted to do. I don't care what you think. You know, it's not any spoil. So I'll tell you two or three stories with him. So there was somebody he went to raise money for. He was very involved in a lot of different stuff, and raising money for people and helping people, etc. He went to some gevir, some individual, and the person basically refused to meet him. You know, didn't want to get money, didn't want to meet with him. So he stormed into the room. He says, "You don't want to see me? People don't want to see you." The person developed a face rash. He looked like ugly. Nobody wanted to see him. Like, happened like you know, the next few days. Mm-hmm. Like, that type of, like, you know.
Whoa.
So he was mocked, but like, his daughter will tell me the following story, that you don't waste money. Money is given to you to serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu. But Chas V'Shalom, I should give money to not permit mitzvahs for no reason. So whenever he was in New York, the son of the Lord lived in New York. He never would take, you could go through the battery tunnel, which cost money. You could take the bridge, it was for free. He would never take the tunnel. So I'm not going to give money to New York City. I could use money for better things than give money to New York City. Like that was that was his sheet. So, the reason why they were in New York, because one of their sons needed ongoing special therapy, and the therapist was in Manhattan. They lived in Brooklyn. The husband was learning in the Mir Yeshiva, and they drove in to Manhattan every day. The wife drove in to Manhattan every single day. But she's driving. Her father was driving her. He came for a visit. He's driving her, and they're late for the appointment. So they take the tunnel. They would say the time and get to the appointment on time. Otherwise, they're going to be late. So she says, "Daddy, please, I need to go through the tunnel." She says, "Dinola, I don't take the tunnel." She says, "Daddy, please, I need you to take the tunnel." "Dinola, I don't take the tunnel." "Dinola, for you, I'll take the tunnel." "Good." So she gets to they're like one person, they're one car out from paying the toll. The car behind them was an ambulance. It gets a call. So the law is, they turn on the siren. It has to go. So they flag any cars in the road. Flag through, so they don't have to pay the toll. She says, Papa got his. He didn't have to pay for his toll.
It's good to be cheap sometimes.
See, he told us a story that remember New York Air.
Yeah, sure.
Remember New York Air?
Yeah.
You don't remember New York Air? There was an airline called New York Air. The planes had a picture of a big apple.
Had a picture of a big apple with a Biden, right?
So when New York Air, they had these really cheap flights, from these different cities into New York. So it's in Detroit. So the flights were $19 one way.
Right.
From Detroit to New York. The promotion, the first flight was 19 cents. Okay? So Rabbi Kaufman tells his wife, he hears about this thing, he says, her mother was still alive, she lived on the Lower East Side. So he says, "Risha, I'm going to go visit your mother." She says, "Shmuel, the place is going to be packed. There's going to be like a million people want to get on this plane. We're not getting on the plane." She says, "We're getting on the plane. Risha, let's go down to the airport, we're getting on the plane. 19 cents, we're going to visit your mother. 38 cents there, 38 cents back, we're visiting your mother." Okay? That much I can afford to pay you. So he gets there, and there's like hundreds and hundreds of people there. The plane holds like 250 people, and there's like, there's like 1,000 people there. She says, "Shmuel," he says, "listen to me, we're getting on the plane." Good. Comes time for the flight to depart, and there's a delay, mechanical issues. It'll be ready, delayed for an hour. Hour comes, delayed again. So people are, finally, this big fellow gets up, this Midwestern, Southern Midwestern, he says, "They take you up, but they don't take you down." He says, "I'm not getting on the plane unless there's a religious man on that plane. I'm a rabbi! I'm a rabbi!" I paid for his ticket. They put him on the plane. He and his wife. Wow. That was Rabbi Kaufman. He would not waste money. In his house, guest, mamash gerachava for mitzvah, gerachava
for himself.
But to waste, he used to go to the airport. He would send the kids to look at all the coin, the payphones, see if there's any coins left over. Rabbi Kaufman, it's like, what's wrong? It's a mitzvah. You use the money for mitzvah, not his ball.
Wow.
But money is a bracha. Money is a matan from Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Use it for mitzvahs, hard rap, whatever you want. But it's time to waste it.